You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus from New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you all with us. Once again, I mean, there's no secret now. I think from coast to coast, it's known that Voner is a history buff, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I love history. I never seem to find that things get old or there's a lot of repetition, because there really isn't, especially in U.S. history. It's such a rich, vast collection of history about this country, and sometimes you find those little nuggets that most people were not aware of, and that's exactly the case this week. I came across a new book that I've been thoroughly enjoying. The title of the book is Valiant Women, and my guest this week is Lena Andrews. She's the author, a Boston native, by the way, and also a military analyst with the CIA. And Lena's book is really about the women during World War II. A large percentage of women who were very much involved in the war efforts, but their work, their efforts, and the things that they did during that period have gone pretty much by the wayside, and we forget the important role that they played. So for the next half hour, we'll be speaking with Lena Andrews about her new book. Lena, nice to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
One, it's always nice to have a local guest, a Boston born, Boston bred. But now, I mean, you've moved on. But let me ask you, I mean, you're working with the government. Where did you have the time to write a book, first and foremost?
That's a very good question. Sometimes I look back, I don't know where I fell. I'm sure it is. In some ways, it was kind of a miracle timing, the very few. I was working, but because of the changes in schedule, of course, I had a little bit more free time on my hands than I usually did. And I got to the end of Netflix, essentially, and decided I needed to do something that would keep me engaged with the world instead of totally disengaging with it. And I had been thinking about this project idea since my days in Boston, my graduate work. And I finally thought, you know what, I'm going to work on this little proposal that I've been thinking about for years, but I couldn't get the bee out of my bonnet. And the rest is history. 3 or 4 years later, the book is now out, Valiant Women, and I'm delighted that I could find thing to take from COVID that was positive and forward-looking and also backward-looking, but it was such a surprise to me that I would come out of a global pandemic with something like this.
Well, as I said at the outset, I was aware of this only because I love history, but also had family members, uncles that served in the armed forces during World War II, and they related stories. In fact, the term that I remember so distinctly as a kid was Rosie the Riveter, meaning that while they may not have donned a backpack, helmet, or rifle, many women were really on the front lines, health, medical, nursing, but more importantly, in the production of weaponry, jets and tanks and everything else. And that's where the term Rosie Riveter came from. So for many years, it's been pretty much ingrained in my mind that women did play a huge role. But why does that seem, here we are in the year 2023, women have made tremendous strides in all areas, not only in the workplace, but everywhere. I mean, they're equal to their male counterparts, as it should be. But more importantly, why has this been somewhat left, if you will, in the lurch? Why hasn't this become a more prominent story, especially by, women wanting to put forth the fact that, hey, we're equal to men in any way, shape, or form. And here's the perfect example that during World War II, they were part of the war effort. Why hasn't that been more prominent?
It's a great question. And to be totally honest, I had the same basic understanding of women in World War II up until I started writing this book, which is to say, I think everybody thinks that the story of women in World War II is really the story of Rosie the Riveter, and it is. Manufacturing was an enormous place where women had a huge contribution. Some people may have read books about the women who broke codes or spied behind enemy lines, And all of those are fantastic stories that I love and was very familiar with. I was, you know, I counted myself as an expert of World War II. So, of course, you know, I think I knew those, and I think many people also know those. But the truth is actually much broader, especially when it comes to women who served in military uniform. So over 350,000 American women donned military uniforms in World War II, which, to give listeners a sense, is about the size of today's active duty Navy. So it's a big number. But even more impactful than their numbers was the actual content of their contribution. They were at the heart of the support operations that underwrote Allied victory. So they were doing things like fixing planes and tanks. They were drawing the maps that were helping soldiers move through Normandy. They were learning how to use their guns. The basic stuff that makes the military work is where we find American women in uniform. And, you know, all of this was essential, but I think, as you know, it just has been totally underappreciated, not just because it's work that women were doing, but in general, I think as a larger society, we don't have a great understanding of the support operations and the backbone of the battlefield that allows frontline soldiers to do their jobs. So for me, this was a really exciting story in the sense that not only did I get to tell an interesting story about women, which, of course, I love, but I also got to tell an interesting story about the war and the really the meat of how we won it and our strategy. And so when I can weave those two things together, it really, you know, it doesn't get much better than that from the perspective of an author. So that's what I'm really trying to bring to readers, is those two stories told together instead of in parallel.
I got to tell you, Lena, the other thing that really caught my attention as I was reading the book was the fact that there was no draft for women. Nobody was pushing women into the war effort. So, yeah, as you talked about, the 350,000 plus women, who donned uniforms, who went forward in support of the war effort, they were volunteers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a wonderful point. I'm so glad you brought it up, because you aren't the only one who's surprised. I was surprised, and so was the entire military leadership team at the time. So when they first rolled out the women's programs, the first one was in 1942, extending into 1943, the Army, for instance, estimated they would get about 10,000 women who volunteered in the first year. In the first year, they got about 60,000 women who signed up. In New York alone, where they had 30 slots for the Mid-Atlantic region, they had something like 5,000 applications. So women were really eager to serve, and they had basically been finding ways domestically to contribute, whether it was driving ambulances or joining air defense corps. You know, they were already ready to sign up because others, their uncles, their dads, their sons were all signing up, and they wanted to do their part too. But for whatever reason, I think we can all speculate about the reasons, but a lot of the senior military leaders at the time just didn't think that women were up for the challenge. Now, it turns out they very much were, and the one exception to the people who were doubtful of women's desire to volunteer, of course, the women who were tasked with leading the forces themselves. They said, you guys, we're going to be overwhelmed with the number of women. And to be sure, they were very overwhelmed in that first year.
So there was no, in other words, once there was some level of acceptance, both military leaders as well as the, just soldiers in the field came to realize the uniqueness that they brought to the effort, and that they were tremendously, what I'm trying to say is, without these women in the background and in support services, our military might not have done as well, or the war might have gone on longer, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to put it this way, in 1940, 1941, we had a serious power problem even before the war began. Marshall, General George C. Marshall, one of the greatest military commanders in history, understood this very early on because he saw us producing all this stuff. You know, we had 2 million military trucks by the end of the war, 80,000 tanks, 300,000 aircraft. But all of those things are useless if you don't have pilots to fly, if you don't have men to, get in the cockpit who are trained, if you don't have people to maintain those pieces of equipment. And that sort of bridge between the home front and the front line, keeping the materiel and the men prepared to do the jobs that they needed to do overseas, was a key part of what women were doing. And, it ran the gamut. So one of the women I talked to was named Jessie Kontrabecki. She was otherwise a pretty normal 20-year-old woman when the war started. She was working in a factory and not really enjoying her life, but she had a real ability. She was a tinkerer. She was really good with her hands, and it turns out she was great at maintaining the small gears and altimeters and gauges on planes. And that's what she did at NAS Jackson, Naval Air Station Jacksonville. For the duration of the war, she made sure that planes got back to the Pacific so they could be redeployed and used. So it's those little sorts of things that you don't think of as being essential to the campaign. But if you don't have Jesse Kontrabekis all over the nation, you don't have planes to fight in the Pacific. And so that's really what the book tries to bring to life, to sort of narrative stories and also a broader understanding of war. These small tasks, which are often underappreciated, all add up to an Allied victory in the end.
Yeah, I also want to make clear to listeners that, and you get that sense from reading Lena's book, that it wasn't as if we had millions of planes, tanks, and armaments just sitting there waiting to be used. We really didn't start getting geared up until the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and then it was all-out effort to put combat teams together. But as you talked about, making sure that the production of armaments and everything else kept up with the pace as well. So this is not like, well, these women already had this inventory. No, they didn't. It was really from scratch, and many of them were bootstrappers. I just want to take a quick pause to remind those listeners who are just tuning in that this is 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and this week's edition of The Public Eye features a Boston-born and bred author, Lena Andrews. Her new book is Valiant Women, and we're talking about the multitude of women who spent a good portion of World War II supporting our combat troops in all aspects of the war effort, but especially in support services, making sure that everything ran smoothly, making sure that our troops had armaments and so much. And Lena, I keep saying armaments and weaponry, but it wasn't just that. I mean, they also there were women who served, nurses and aides who worked in hospitals all over the globe. But what are the categories am I overseeing overlooking that women served primarily a big role during World War II?
The full range of basically non-combat activities, really getting up to the edge of combat activities. So in the military, we talk about what's called combat support, sometimes called non-combat forces. And it's basically everyone who helps the guys right at the front line do their jobs. So as you know, this ranges from smallest little things, like I just talked about a minute ago, women like Jesse Kontrabekis who are tinkering with planes and making sure they're maintained, all the way up to one of my favorites and a Massachusetts native herself, Mary Sears, who if you don't know her, I encourage you to Google her or read the book even better. She's in there. She is this incredible woman who has not one, not two, but three degrees from Radcliffe, of course, Harvard for women at that time. And she's an expert in zoology of all things, but she has a real fascination with ocean tides and the seafloor and ocean life. It turns out she's very useful in the war, and she signs up for the Navy WAVES, which is the women's program for the Navy, and becomes one of the people to advise admirals on where they should land their ships in the Pacific, because she understands what the beaches are going to be like at different times of day, under different conditions, and after we've been blocked out of the Pacific for years, that's an incredibly important skill. It really runs a full bit of wartime activities, and what I think is so important about pointing this out and looking at these women in this lens is that what you start to understand is that war really is a team sport. There is no one person who is winning this war. For every guy who's shooting a gun, there are 10 and those are in fact women in uniform, and that's the case too, and it's very much the case now. That is a perennial and lasting feature of any combat system. So it's combat or support functions that become essential in a large-scale war like World War II, and essential sort of in every combat scenario that you can imagine, even today.
Lena, one area that we didn't talk about, and yet you bring it up in the book, and I know you mentioned Marshall, to this day, is revered as one of the great military minds in this country. But there was President Roosevelt, there was Marshall, there was MacArthur. I mean, there were, and I'm that's just scraping the surface. I mean, there were admirals and there were Air Force generals in every branch of the service. And I get the sense that, you know, some were more open-minded than others. But did that hinder? Did some of the males who up until that point would think it would unheard of to allow women serving in the military, regardless of capacity, did any of them pose a block, if you will, or hinder the efforts in women getting involved?
Yes, all of them, in fact, which is a great testament to the fact that no one is perfect, right? I revere many of these leaders, and I have all of their memoirs and books on my bookshelf, and I still think they're wonderful commanders and brilliant strategists, including people like, as you said, Marshall, Hap Arnold, who is the head of the Air Force, MacArthur, Ernest King, who was running the Navy for a period of time. All of these guys were extremely brilliant commanders, and thank goodness they were, because they helped us win the war. But when it came to the issue of women in the military, they were extremely skeptical. And that's a very kind word for some of their early correspondents on the issue. You know, Eisenhower, for instance, in his memoir, admits that he was totally skeptical and totally against the idea of women. Eisenhower, of course, being one of the most important field commanders in the United States. But by the time he's commanding troops in North Africa in our first major campaign abroad, he's asking for companies of women to come help him in his headquarters because the guys he has can't keep up with the massive amount of essentially paperwork that the war has, for the first time in, you know, American history, brought on to a military headquarters. So I think what's most important about these commanders is not that they got it wrong at the beginning, because they definitely did, but the ways that they were visionary is that they were able to see that they were getting it wrong and were able to be convinced, mostly by senior women, women like another wonderful Massachusetts native, a congresswoman, Edith Norse Rogers, who pushed them to see women as the assets that they were, who were sitting on the sidelines and not getting the opportunities, the at-bats to serve. And once they saw that, and especially once they saw them in uniform, in the field, doing their jobs, they made a very quick turn of opinion, because they just knew that these women were not only, you know, helpful, but they were trained in exactly the tasks already that we needed on the battlefield or right behind the battle line. So, you know, I give them both a lot of you know, a lot of credit because they got it right. But I think we should also learn from the fact that initially they all got it wrong.
Mm. Yeah. No question about it. Linda, the other thing that sticks out in my mind is the amount of, well, for lack of a better term, the awards that were issued. You had the Gold Star, you had the Purple Heart, you know, for bravery and for going above and beyond the call of duty. So many servicemen, in fact, many of the people we just talked about, the Roosevelts of the world, the Marshalls, the MacArthurs, the Eisenhowers, were all highly decorated for their efforts during World War II. How about these women? Did any of them receive that kind of national recognition?
Absolutely. And in fact, in this respect, one of the groups that I really like to highlight, not only, of course, they sort of received most of the commendations that you'd imagine and that were received by men, although because they weren't in combat, officially they were prohibited from getting certain honors. But one group that I really like to highlight for folks that I think in many corners, even in some veteran circles, they don't get enough credit is the Army and Navy Nurse Corps. And I actually start the first part of with a story about one of the nurses, Dorothy Still, who was a Navy nurse stationed on the Philippines in 1941. And a California native, she has never been outside of California until she joins the Navy and finds herself sitting in the Philippines on the day that the Japanese attack both Pearl Harbor and the Philippines over the island. And she essentially spends the next 4 years of her life in captivity. The reason I like to highlight these women is because there's incredible underbelly to this story, that the battle for the Philippines was on for a very long time, and there are opportunities for people to leave the island, and the commander who's in charge, Wainwright, has put women nurses on the top of that list. He knows he needs to get women off the island because, quite frankly, the optics of having women as prisoners is very bad for the United States. And some of those women, some of those nurses do get on the boats and get on the planes that can get off the island and make their escape. But many of the nurses know that in captivity, the men that they are serving alongside will not have medical care. And so instead of getting on those ships and getting on those subs and getting on those planes, they stay, knowing that they will go into captivity and knowing that they will be responsible for caring for the prisoners of war under the Japanese captivity. So when you want to talk about sort of honor and integrity and bravery, that to me just speaks volumes. And ultimately, I think close to 100 women are kept in captivity in the Philippines and also elsewhere. And the nurses are often the ones who you see with these really harrowing stories of being behind enemy lines because they're often very, very close to the front. So the book really tries to honor their service and honor just how brave these women were for doing what they were doing. Because they simply do not get the credit that they deserve in the larger narrative. So I hope folks really pay close attention to those sections in the book if they happen to pick it up.
Well, you know, I said it at the outset, and after reading Valiant Women, your book, I've gotten a much broader and a much greater sense and a really true appreciation for the efforts that women put forth during the war. And it's surprising because all during my tenure, grammar school, middle school, high school, you name it, even college, there was nothing, absolutely no mention whatsoever, maybe a little passage here or there that, some troops were cared for by nurses back at a military hospital. And you would think, well, you know, maybe that military hospital was, right here in Worcester or Boston. There was never, as you spoke about, that there's never been that recognition of putting forth that idea. Thankfully, folks like yourself have put it forth in the pages of a book, and it really is brilliantly written, first of all. And I know some people say, oh, it's going to be one of those tedious. No, it's not. Lena has written this. I mean that, Lena. I mean, sometimes you pick up a history book and it's a lot of just mainly, detailed facts, and it can get get old quickly. This was not the case. You brought to life human beings. You put not only their name forward, but their efforts and how they lived their life. And you talked about the woman from California. I mean, think about it, just leaving your hometown, never been anywhere in the world, to be put inside of a military detention during a war. I mean, I don't think it gets any more real than that. But we've got a few moments left, so let me ask you, what was the primary motivation here? Was it that you were kind of, I mean, somebody doesn't just wake up on a Monday morning saying, I'm going to write a book about women who, who put forth all these efforts and helped win the war. Was there something, was there someone in your background, somebody in the family? I mean, what was the inspiration?
Well, I think it was long running desire of mine. I have three incredible uncles who served in the army in Vietnam and other times. And I always knew that their stories were extremely interesting to me, and they were kind enough to share them with me when I was younger. So I had that experience. And, I knew that my grandfather had served in World War II, like many men of the generation. And that sort of motivated me, I think, to be more interested in the military broadly. This specific story was a bit serendipitous, and I confess it was as much from embarrassment as it was anything else. I was on a trip to Washington before I'd moved here permanently, and I was at the Arlington National Cemetery, and I stumbled on the Military Women's Memorial, which is right at the entrance of Arlington, but a very small and unknown memorial to most people. And I walked in, and the first thing I saw was an exhibit on women in World War II, and I saw a lot of the stuff that folks will see in the book. And this was at a time when I had read pretty much everything about World War II. I thought I had read every single book that existed about the war, and I knew as much as I could possibly know. And I was confronted with the reality that despite being a woman who claimed to be an expert on World War II, I knew very little about the women who actually served in uniform in World War II. And that embarrassment was at once, horrifying and shocking, and also incredibly motivating, because it said to me, like any researcher worth her salt, you've got something to learn, so go out and learn it. And so I just, at that point, started slowly reading the memoirs and sort of getting a sense of what the universe was like for these women, what the scope of their contribution was. And I have to say, I'm glad you brought it up earlier, but I had the opportunity to talk to several living veterans in this process. And once you talk to one living veteran, you just know that the story has to be, everyone has to hear this story.
Yeah.
So I hope that readers will get a sense of that on the page, that it's just such a compelling story. You kind of can't let it go once you start.
I you know, you don't have to be, and I want to say this, and I truly mean this, you don't have to be a history buff. Valiant Women is a book about human life, sacrifices made, people who made a huge difference, especially at a time when, World War. God knows mm-hmm. who, you know, it could have gone one way or the other. The other thing I want to point out is Lena's book, the cover has a bunch of women in uniform, in military uniform, the boots, the whole nine yards, sitting on a Jeep or you're gathered around a Jeep when this photograph was taken. So right off the bat, that caught my attention as well. So she really does a beautiful job, an in-depth study of the lives of these women who, you know, didn't have to spend years, working in the military, being, playing the role that they did in support of the war effort, and thank God that they did, because I think it did make a big difference in us winning the war. Elena, real quickly, if people want to reach out to you directly, is there a way they can do that?
My website is the best way. Because of my career, I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but if you got my name, Lena, L-E-N-A, Andrews, A-N-D-R-E-W-S, lenaandrews.com, there's a form there. And it actually goes to me. I like it. So please do reach out. I'm glad you mentioned the title, because I just got outreach from one of the women, the daughters of one of the women on a title. I do check it. If you have great stories of people in your family, please let me know. This is why I do the work. So do reach out.
Yeah. I'm just kind of laughing as I'm thinking, as I said at the outset, Lena is employed by the CIA, so it's not really a good idea to be on social media a whole lot.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
Yeah, exactly. I think they may frown on that a bit. But anyway, the book is Valiant Women, the Extraordinary American Service Women Who Helped Win World War II. In many, many capacities, a great read and a great rich history of this country, first and foremost, but also of the women who put their lives on the line in hopes of freedom. And thank God that they did, because we're living that freedom today for their sacrifices and their work. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, Lena Andrews. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. I am not employed by the CIA, so there's no worries on that end. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you.